you were saying about home visits, it's become...
I would imagine, I don't really know now, but I never hear any teachers today discuss home visits. But it if and when it was necessary, whether it was required or whether you volunteered and did it, the results were always very important. Even if some of your conclusions were negative, you learned something that you didn't know prior to making a home visitation. Not to mention just going in the door the first time, followed by whatever kind of greeting you got and the general rapport you could establish between the parents while you were there. But I would be all, I hope nobody in the Teachers Federation shoots me for this, but I would be all in favor of home visitations, because that's the only way you can determine anything now. I'm a strong believer, talking about parent involvement, I'm a strong believer in the parent is the key, and therefore the home is the key. And unfortunately, we don't have much of either now.
Well, one more question about the school, Lincoln, and then I'd like to get on to what your experiences were with integration. Can you tell me about Mr. McDougall? What your memories are of him?
Mr. McDougall was strict, and I'm saying this from the point of view of a teacher. If you were supposed to be somewhere, you had just about best be there, or you heard about it.
As a teacher,
I think he was pretty fair. A lot of things he didn't understand at times that he would later understand. If he came to understand something that was caused a difference of opinion, he would always come back and tell you. Like if he said, I didn't really understand what you were saying. I see this altogether different now. That kind of thing. And Mr. McDougall visited the classrooms. Just dropping in, not to put anybody necessarily on the spot, but because I guess he wanted to see what was going on, how you were faring. And I'm sure he learned a lot, because sometimes he comes and says, I didn't realize you had as many kids in the classroom, that sort of thing. I remember he told me once when that by having his own students go to school, it was sometimes a little hard for him, because sometimes the kids would tease them or say to them, in passing the office, like if one of his kids was passing the office, they would just holler and call him McDougall by the first name. But you knew he was talking about the kids, but it was also a chance for them to holler and call the principal's name without putting a title on it. That sort of thing. I don't think that was a problem. But other than that, I think by the strictness that he had running his meetings and stuff, it's more or less like a kid who leaves home and finally realizes some of the things that his parents told him that he didn't like really were beneficial. And that's the way I view Mr. McDougall. A lot of stuff I didn't like that he did, but it was beneficial in later situations that I found myself in, like being on time and being able to back your case. I learned to keep records on students. And parents respect if you're having a problem with the student and having a problem with the parent, which is almost anonymous. When you go in for a conference, if you have a record there with that child's name on it, I think that the parent feels that you are ready to substantiate whatever it is you're going to talk about. And I learned a lot of that from Mr. McDougal.
Tough man, huh?
Yeah. But like most principals in those days, they ran the school efficiently, you know.
No nonsense.
No nonsense. And then, you know, you never heard anything about the cafeteria running short of money or that somebody made off with the milk bill or something like that, you know, which has happened in some time since where there have been some, not where I have worked, but I have heard of places where financial irresponsibility on somebody's part, short of embezzling. The teams were very well run. We had two buses that were capable of highway transport. We didn't have to rent buses due to the efforts of R.D. Smith.
You had a second bus in the 60s. I knew you got a bus. He acquired a bus, and they were using it in the 50s.
Yeah. He went to some auction or something and bought that bus, I think. I don't know whether it was. I don't know. They practically gave it to him. And he came back home. He told me he put a 25-cent fuse in it. And I actually drove that bus. We were coming from Burlington, I believe. And the driver, who was my bass horn player, was having trouble with the gears. I said, pull the bus over. I had a school bus driver's license. I said, let me show you how smooth the gears are. I didn't know whether he was having a transmission problem, whether it was real or not. But anyway, I was able to drive the bus back. And so it had been a commercial type highway bus. It wasn't a converted school bus or church bus or something. It was actually could have been a city, some bus from a large city, part of city transportation, because it was pretty big. It was about 42 passengers. I think it was something like that. And so the band and football team had adequate transportation if we wanted to go somewhere, independent transportation if we wanted to go somewhere.
Did you go to most of the away games?
The band went, yes.
Because I know that it wasn't always that way in the 50s, but in the 60s, you're saying you did go to most of the away games with that.
Well, when sometimes if it wasn't feasible for the band to go, sometimes if the game was scheduled in the afternoon, but usually if it was a late evening game or a night game, you know, where the kids had a chance to go and come back, rather than having to rush home then rush back to school, it depended on the time of the game. But usually we had one or two places that we would certainly go. One of them was to Henderson. For that was a big game. One of the biggest games in this area, black or white, college or high school, was when Lincoln played Merritt Moore in Durham. They finally had to, we used to have the Carborough, and they finally had to move it to the county stadium in Durham to accommodate the crowds.
That many?
Yeah. It would be one of the best games that you want to see among high school kids. I mean, it was tough. And you never knew which way the game was going. I mean, it wasn't ever a pushover for either team that won. It was always a good game.
How many people would show up to that game?
They would fill County Stadium.
Which is what, 10,000?
At least, I guess. But I mean, both stands would be full and all around the end zones would be full of people.
Wasn't Merritt Moore a bigger school than Lincoln?
I think it was. It was built. It was more recent than Lincoln. It was a county school. Well, this was part of the Chapel Hill Carver schools. This is more or less a city school. And the county school had probably had a larger student body than Lincoln, or they might have been equal, because I think the state required, they had the 4A or 3A or 2A or depending upon the population of the school as to what division you played in.
Do you remember the record of the football team when you were here?
I don't, but it was very good. They won most of their games. Won most of the games. And not true of basketball, but football was almost perfect. And I know Coach Pillman. Hung his head a little lower during basketball season, but during football season, we were tops here. Because, see, I don't know whether I'm getting this confused that he had did two stints here at Lincoln.
No, he what? Did. He had two stints.
Okay.
He left for 5 years.
Okay.
And Coach Brad Bradshaw or Will Bradshaw came in for five.
Uh-huh. I think Bradshaw was a good coach, too. So somewhere in there it began, but I know that I remember when Coach Pillman was here and started the ties. I think he started the year I came in. But we used to compare notes. Mr. McDougal would get on the PA system and after a game or something and either give condolences or give congratulations to the teams. And also to the band. And I would always send Coach a little note or something after the, however the announcements were. So one day I drew a little picture of a basket of dead flowers and sent it to him. And I think that's in his, if you ever get a chance to see his scrapbook that his kids got, that picture's in the front. Because I was just teasing. But he felt so close to he had laminated and put it in that book.
I have copies, and hopefully it'll be part of the show.
Okay. That was one morning when the comments from the principal weren't that flowery. So I told him, I said, you didn't get any flowers this morning. I'm going to send you some. So I sent drew a basket of dead flowers. He was a good guy. I don't think he was ever quite able to accept a subservient position like I thought he got when they integrated. Going from top senior high school successful football coach to a seventh grade physical ed teacher was a little bit. And when he went to help out at Chapel Hill Senior High School, he was always kind of put in a position where everybody else was above him and didn't hesitate to let him know.
The white coaches.
Yep.
His record at Lincoln was just incomparable.
Yep.
Tell me about your thoughts on what happened to the schools after integration? You have the energy?
Yeah, I just hate to do it. I think my personal feelings are that I just couldn't understand how the same students who under a system at Lincoln could, in less than 3 months, in terms of their conduct, just change for the worse. Now, I am not taking away from students who there will always be a segment of students who will succeed. I think sometimes even if the teachers don't show up. But I don't know how the white teachers felt. But there didn't seem to be a feeling of tolerance necessarily. For instance, you see maybe black kids sitting out in the hall and you pass by and ask, what you doing out in the hall? Teacher sent me out. I don't know whether this was a way of the way they had been accustomed to handling disciplinary problems? I don't know, because naturally I wasn't in the situation with them prior to integration. But I just felt that there wasn't a great deal of effort on the part of some teachers to make kids do what they ought to do. This may be true in an integrated situation or in a segregated situation, but it certainly was more noticeable in an integrated situation. I don't know whether that was because of greater expectations or whether it was just obvious and it was brought to your attention.
Are you saying that you felt that the white teachers had lower expectations for their black students than they had?
I can't say that, but I can say this. If you've been in a segregated situation, white people are also segregated, that all of, it was by your choice. Black people were segregated not by their choice, but by the law, which is the choice of white people. That because you change it, however you change, however, whatever mechanics are involved in changing, doesn't mean that your feelings are going to change. And even today, I'm still amazed at some things that I find out. What integration taught me was that all of the things that people thought were different were the same. It's like a universality that everybody cries at some time, everybody laughs, and usually it's about the same things. And it seemed like the awakening was is that these people laugh and cry like everybody else, and I'm pretty sure that works on both sides of the tracks. But I'm amazed now. Sometimes I hear people say some things that they say, well, gee, I never know that they did that. I had an instrumental group playing at my church, and I brought in white people, whatever, to help out to play the instruments. And I think sometimes some black people don't think that that white people at that age are still playing, and certainly some of the white people didn't know that the church, say, had $80,000 or $90,000 Rorter organ, pipe organ, or something. You know, there's some things that we just don't know. Now, and it's out of a lack of experience. It's not out of ignorance. It's just, you know, you don't know some things. It's like when Sammy Davis Jr., when they said that a man told him he went in some restaurant that he couldn't smoke in there. And he says, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And the waiter says, well, how could you? You know, you've never been in there, you know, and you've never been exposed to that type of setting. You naturally wouldn't know. But, of course, Sammy never forgot that. But I'm surprised at some things that I still learn, even today and at my age, about things that people don't know about each other. And as I said, I think integration, the best thing was that it taught us that there are some things that we didn't know that we should have known. Some things that we assumed that were not correct, and some things that we should have assumed are commonalities. That, you know, everybody has the same thing. That doesn't mean that there are cultural differences. I never forget one day in an integrated situation, a little boy came and says, well, my father just got back from India. He was consulting over there on something. And this little black kid had never been out of Carborough. So he said something to him to shut up. And I got amused. I mean, they weren't mad or nothing like that, but he just couldn't understand what that was all about. Nor would this kid have understood a weekend at his house, you know, if he did his visit. I watch them a lot of times on Sesame Street when the kids go to each other's house, you know. And I used to tease the kids a lot of times about shillings. So my last year before I retired, a bunch of the white kids got together. And at the end of the year party, they went down. They had gotten me some chitlins and had warmed them up in a home ec and wanted to see me eat them. During the meantime, I had been talking about it during the year, and a little white girl came to me one day. She said, Ms. Gone, she said, all these kids in here pretended they don't know about chitlins. They do. I said, I know. And so that kind of exchange, you know, that you're gonna have some cultural difference with people. There's certain universalities that are the same. I would imagine if you found somebody on Mars, it'd have some of the similar characteristics, although I hope not. But I'd rather enjoy teaching up until about the last 3 years. And I began to see the whole cultural pattern change.
How so?
A reduction in morals. I think this now is about one of the most immoral societies on the face of the earth. And especially in the last couple of years, and especially the last year with the emphasis on sex, on sitcoms and all that stuff. And my kids said, oh, you used to do it. I said, well, it's not what I used to do. It used to be a song, it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. I don't know if you'll remember those lyrics or not. And I was telling kids, some young girls, they were trying to defend shacking. And I was trying to tell them that the girl stands to lose the most in a situation like that, if it doesn't work out. And I think the morals are low, not to the point where I don't know whether that's the case now or not. They don't think so. So if it's okay with them, that means that our morals are pretty low.
By shacking, you mean shacking up?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mean to just stay on the point of morals, but girls who come down the street in shorts, when I was a youngster, guys would just look at them, you know. They don't pay them any attention now. And I think that's a bad sign.
Because it's so common?
Yeah. Because when sex becomes, when we become complacent about sex, and it's just, you know, then what's next? I mean, what are we going to do to replace that? Somebody said, well, you know, your age and everything, you used to. I said, no, I've always felt the way that I feel now. Now, my age may have made it center home more, you know. But I just, I began to see some of that. Like I asked the professor one time about the kids chewing gum, and he didn't think anything was wrong with it. And that was the first time that I realized the main reason they didn't want kids chewing gum in class was because they stick it on the floor, or it gets on the floor, or it gets under the tables. That's not what I was taught. I was taught chewing gum was bad because it just didn't look right. You trying to talk to someone like a bank teller, and she's so busy chewing, you know what I mean? That's always what I thought. It was just impolite.
You didn't have gum chewing at Lincoln, did you?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. Man, you didn't go crazy if a child was chewing gum, you know. You just said, put that gum out. Don't come in with that gum in your mouth or something, you know. Because usually it was distracted. I don't know how it was in your schools. Did y'all have gum chewing?
No.
But they were saying, this is what surprised me. We don't want the gum chewing because it gets stuck on the floor. I think that was just that particular principle's ignorance. He may have actually thought that. But you know, it's more or less like now when you go to the bank and you see the teller writing and she has her fingers. You ever seen these girls? And I was going to do some research on it, but I got tired of it. That wasn't my main topic. But a lot of the schools stopped using the big pencils which prevented a kid's fingers from folding over when he's in first and second grade. We didn't get regular pencils till we got to the third grade. We weren't allowed to use regular pencils.
So that you could hold it properly.
Hold it properly. And I've seen children, all kinds of things. And I asked them, I said, where'd you go to elementary school? Sir, I just want to start something, you know. But I mean, like those things went the wayside. I remember in my teaching when it was illegal to teach phonics. Around 1950, when I first started, the thing then was what they call progressive education. And in some instances, children were taught, like you show Johnny an apple, and he learns to form the sounds of an apple. Show him a peach, and he learns to say that, and show him a cherry, and he says small apple. Well, I know actually the teachers were called in, some of the elderly ladies were called in their conferences, I found out about later on, and were told they would have to stop teaching phonics and getting on this progressive education thing, which proved to be like modern math. Well, I know I have wandered way off the subject, but these things come to mind.
That's
a lot of that comes to mind when some of the facts you were asking about never come to mind. Some of the things I just don't recall.
Anything more you want to say about integration?
Well, I had more equipment than I ever had before. But there seems to always be a check and balance system, and sometimes the checking isn't always good, and the balancing isn't always good, like having all the equipment. But then the attitudes of children toward learning was changing. If I had some of the equipment that I got after we integrated, if I had that, say, when I was working at Randolph County with the kids who were just seeming so eager to learn, not that we didn't have problems. Had one parent, even back in 1955, brought a gun into class against me. I didn't know it till he was gone. And the principal just nonchalant said, you know, he had a gun. I said, you mean to tell me you let him come in my room? It was after school, something he thought I had said about his niece that I didn't say. I should have said, because she was plumb crazy, but I didn't say that. I said she just seemingly was lacking in ability in some areas or something like that. See? But she took it home and told the parents, I said she was crazy. Of course, the kids all said she was crazy. But he came, now he was red hot, I didn't know, but he held his peace pretty good. And I explained to him what I had said and some of the things that she'd done, and he got up and left. But I was saying about equipment, if I had had some of those things, I would think about what I could have done in terms of school instead of having to very limited amount of stuff and having to be forced to do all your demonstrations at your desk because of equipment and because of a lack of time. We tried several things after integration at Phillips in terms of having more time in the lab. That seemed to be a problem. Then we decided to, we did team teaching. We did some things with that, which think those things were good. Some people say you burn out. I don't like that phrase because when something is burnt out, it's to me it's like a match. It's no more good. I think you get tired of the situation and you get tired of the results that you get as compared to the effort that you put in. And people talk about bad teachers. I don't think they're all bad teachers. I think there's some teachers who maybe find out earlier in the game, they're more aware of the situation. And maybe, just maybe, begin to balance off their efforts with what they expect to achieve. given the kinds of situations that are not geared to producing anything. I've been following these people who they show on the McNeil report on PBS, these teachers who started off in New York, who were selected to go out, who volunteered as part of the Brooklyn College program, go out in school. And one girl actually spoke her mind. The guy asked if she liked children, because somebody told her, evaluating her, that this is her first year, and that perhaps she shouldn't be around you. She said she liked children, but she actually told the truth. A lot of her teaching she did not enjoy. But you can't tell people that, not even like in this setting. There were things that I didn't enjoy. When you have to spend a lot of time with paperwork, and thank God they did reduce the kind of time required to fill out a register every 20 days of attendance, all of the interest you had to make, all of the duplications. So they finally got it down. Now it's done on a computer. And I give Chapel Hill credit for that, because the teachers just balked it. You know? They came to our school and found the registers. The State Department would come in unannounced, check registers, and people have lost their jobs. The register went up to par. Ours was in such bad condition that after then everybody went on the computer system, which was good.
So you went from the band director at Lincoln
to full-time science teacher.
Full-time science teacher, and you stopped teaching band altogether at Phillips?
Uh-huh.
And you just taught science there for the rest of your career?
Uh-huh. Which was 17 years. I was at Phillips 17 years.
How were you treated by the white teachers when you went to Phillips?
Everybody was leaning over backwards. It appeared to be. For the most part, there was no problem with any sort of prejudice that I know of. I don't recall any outward things. I remember one guidance counselor kind of talking down to me one time, and she was asking about home visitations. And I had sent this girl to the guidance counselor because I found her conduct incorrigible. I mean, I just didn't see where I could ever do anything with that child, only having her an hour a day. And the guidance counselor, who was just a recent graduate of the university, was telling me stuff about had I been to her home, and which was good. And I was trying to tell her that I hadn't had time to do that. And whenever I send a child out, it's because I reached a point where I don't know nothing else to do in order to maintain any kind of sanity in that class the rest of that period. And she just went on, you know, tried to say a lot of stuff. I finally just told the principal when I went in, I said, don't send me to her anymore. I know she's the counselor for the ninth grade level. I said, but don't send me to her anymore.
Yeah. Any other things that you want to say that we haven't discussed in the last couple of hours, Everett?
I personally think the integration of schools could have been, as a black person, I look at it in somewhat with a certain amount of distaste, because at the same time schools were being integrated, a lot of prominent black institutions were being denigrated. For instance, the principal left here and became principal in charge of building and grounds and stuff over at the high school.
He became assistant principal.
Yeah.
Not the principal. Mae Marshbanks was principal, right?
Right.
So he
and in some instances, the other black principals became duties centered around discipline and buildings and grounds and bus transportation or something. You know, it was other than scholastic. I think that's how the idea of co-principal came into Chapel Hill.
How did you interpret that?
Well,
you said denigration.
Yeah, in my hometown, for instance, we lost our Y. We lost our hospital. We lost, we would have lost our branch library. Not that we wanted to maintain a segregated situation. Black people have always wanted equal opportunity and equal facilities. But somehow or another, that got tied in with the fact that you have to integrate, that being in the presence of white people was more important than having the materials, that you would learn more. I don't take away from that. But that was what we originally wanted, not seeing integration in the future. We wanted same materials, new books, new instruments, new everything when everybody else had new things. I know that in Durham they offered the black people just on the edge of integration a school building that they condemned that next year in place of to meet our needs, and they finally tore the building down. But it seems like integration was never on the terms of black people. It was always on the terms of white people. For instance, we never closed any schools. We never paired any schools. This was all done from those persons in charge who happened to have been white. Your high schools became junior high schools. Except in some cities where you had enough black influence to change that. For instance, we still have predominant black high schools like Hillside, like Williston High in Wilmington, I believe is what it's called. There's still Atkins in Winston-Salem, I believe. May not be now. But I know there's one in Wilmington, maybe Goldsboro, Dudley, and Greensboro, who were able to maintain a predominantly black high school. But a lot of our social institutions that we had pride in were absorbed in the integration process.
Are you saying that the African-American community wasn't interested so much in integration as they were in getting equal facilities,
right,
equal training, equal books, desks, buildings?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And that when integration occurred, it was done on the terms of the white person,
yeah,
and not the black person.
Yeah. And we just sort of acquiesced, and it has been beneficial. It's been beneficial. People who said nothing has changed, that's not true. Even if it's things are done in a subtle way, things have changed and changed for the better. But it would have been much better, I think, if we had had more of a say-so in it. Like I said, we never closed. We never said that, for example, Lincoln Hospital in Durham would be closed. And the way they did that was made it a part of the Durham Hospital Association, or whatever they called it, and finally decided to bulldoze it down and put up now, which is the Lincoln Clinic, which is a far cry from what the hospital was. It might even be a better facility. It's larger and it's serving a larger number of people. Now, and other demographics have changed, so it's kind of hard to evaluate that. The farther away from it you get, it's like people who don't remember black and white water fountains, and the kids today can't conceive of that because it wasn't a part of it, anything that they can associate with. It's like trying to remember where streets were in the neighborhood prior to urban renewal. There are no landmarks, and it's just hard to picture what it was like. And there's not enough photos around because nobody ever thought they'd have to remember it only through photographs. But I would give integration a plus. Because in many instances and many senses of evaluating, things are better than what they were. I only wish television had been more influential and not have taken stereotyping everything, everybody, white and black, everybody's been stereotyped on television in ways that you don't recognize. I can't associate a lot of stuff I see on television with anything that I remember in the past. Now, kids who watch it today, I'd say people who are 20, maybe can carry back to something they saw in their early childhood. But a lot of the silliness, and certainly the sexual innuendos and stuff, I can't associate that with anything that I knew. And if I did them, I wouldn't admit them.
Well, why don't we end it here, Everett? I really appreciate all the time you've spent with me.
Okay.
Thank you so
all
much.
Right.
Thank you for your frankness.